BBC Radio Gloucestershire with Pete Wilson.
Today then, I'm taking you back 20 years to a programme I made to celebrate 100 years of rugby at King's Home. That means this year, of course, is 120 years of rugby at the famous King's Home ground. You'll hear from players and officials who made Gloucester what it is today. Some sadly no longer with us, but some certainly are. There's the likes of Mickey Booth, Mike Burton, Alan Brin, Dick Smith and Son Ian, Canon Mervyn Hughes, Gordon Hudson and the one and only Digger Morris. Listen out at the end of the programme for Digger singing what I believe to be my very own unique recording of Digger singing the pig song. You'll hear how rugby was once played across the pitch at King's Home and how the first game took a grand total of £47 on the gate. We'll start with a news report from 1890.
Good evening, this is the British Broadcasting Corporation and here is the news. Gloucester Corporation has issued the City's rugby club with a notice to quit the Spa. It comes as a consequence of pre-match preparations for a memorable clash against Swansea, which ended in a famous victory for the Gloucester 15. Fearing that the frostbound Spa might be too hard to permit play, officials and members acquired loads of salt which they liberally sprinkled onto the pitch. The ground was thawed and the frost dispersed, but the rugby supporters had been too enthusiastic with the salt and as a result ruined the grass. Soon afterwards, the club received notice to quit.
Being forced to move from the Spa was a severe blow, but it proved to be a blessing in disguise. Lovers of rugby soon launched a move to form a company for the purpose of buying a ground. They searched the city until a suitable spot was found in Worcester Street and the land was bought from the Castle Grimm estate. 4,000 £1 shares were issued, 3,000 of which were retained by the club, so that rugby could be played on the ground which had become known to rugby fans the world over simply as King's Home. Chairman Peter Ford was quick to acknowledge the debt the club owes to those who formed the Gloucester Football and Athletic Club back in 1891.
I'm just so delighted to look at our ground and see how nice it looks, the improvements that's happened over the years, and to thank our forefathers for buying the ground in the first place. It was a wonderful thing 100 years ago that they purchased this ground and gave us the chance just to carry on for a short period and hand it on to someone else. And if we leave everything in a better state than when we took it over, I think we've done our job.
During the course of this programme, I'll be talking to some of the great characters of rugby through the past 100 years. We'll feature Digger Morris, Mickey Booth, and in just a moment, one of the rugby club's more colourful and controversial members, Mike Burton. We'll talk about the games they remember, the people they remember, and some of the significant facts in the history of the ground and the club. But before we move on, it's worth reporting the news from the Gloucester Journal of the 17th of October 1891, which praises the new ground. It says that the first game was played in miserable wet conditions, but unlike the Spa, the new ground is now as fit for play as if both the rain and the game of last Saturday had not taken place. The journal also says that the rain prevented 5,000 regular supporters from attending the game, so it finds it necessary to inform them that the Burton football team did come and that their opponents were driven to the field in Mr. Simmons' breaks, that Mr. Kilminster and his band did enliven the proceedings, and that Mr. Robinson did kick off with all the dignity attached to the coveted letters MP, and that Mr. Roland Hill, the Honorary Secretary of the Rugby Union, did take up the position of referee and that a good match was witnessed. And let me tell you that on that wet night in October, the grand sum of £46, 7 shillings and threepence was taken on the gate. That amount these days would get Mike Burton the sack. Mike is the club's first full-time commercial manager. He's won many international honours and has worn the cherry and white jersey with pride and, like most players, has his own special memories.
The great game in anybody's career at Gloucester is the very first time that you play at home. And to be honest, I can't remember who I played against. I played my first couple of games, one up at Moseley away, and then I played at Leicester. And then there was a game at home, and it was one of the London clubs, I think it was Wasps actually, but I'm not altogether sure whether I remember the people saying congratulations. But I can remember the feeling of going into the dressing room and seeing the Gloucester jerseys hanging on the pegs as they did. And in those days, we ran out from the opposite side of the field, where there's a fitness club there now. And we used to run down the steps and onto the pitch. And of course, not many years before, I'd, as a schoolboy, gone down and watched these blokes play. And there was Mickey Booth, who was known as the general, who ran the team, and Terry Hobson, very underrated outside half, a brilliant kicker of the ball, tremendous pace, you know, a great talented player. Peter Ford, who was a very hard man, uncompromising forward. Alan Brin, who later was capped in the same game as me against Wales years later. And they really made it not too difficult for me. I had a good coach in the terms of propping from Jack Folk, who showed me a lot. You know, he'd say, "Would go low, come here, go there, what to do." And he was a proper old Gloucester forward. I think people attached more importance to my presence in the team when the new Jack was telling me what to do. But nonetheless, it was very comforting. And in the midfield, we had John Bayliss and Ron Pitt. So they were all big games in those days. I mean, it was great to have Harlequins come and to have Wasps arrive there. But they were all special. Every time I played for Gloucester, I can remember, even if it was like a midweek game against someone from down the Valleys or a college team, they were always vital, always important games, and I enjoyed every one of them.
It's interesting that Mike mentioned running out from the opposite side, but it would appear that's not the only change. There's also evidence to suggest that rugby was once played across the ground rather than from Worcester Street, but more about that later on. Mike Burton mentioned another former player, a man who became known as the General, Mickey Booth, rated by many as the best scrum half never to play for England. He was captain in 1962, 64 and 65, and during that time the club played 130 games, of which they won 73 and drew 9. Before Mickey came along, the great Willie Jones held the record for drop goals. Mickey's total of 41, just 3 in front of that, still stands in the record books.
That record makes me laugh because the great Willie Jones was responsible, in my view, for the drop goal coming down from 4 points to 3. He really was a magnificent drop kicker, but Willie played about 2 seasons probably at the most, and with his 38 drop goals, they were in about 39 attempts. My 41 were all from about 5 yards out, and they were after about 500 attempts, probably maybe a few more, but it's a record that I'm very, very embarrassed about.
Give us an insight into what it was like in the dressing room before big matches.
Well, in the early days when I played, I'll give you an example of the inside of a dressing room. Our changing room was divided into three. There was the actual changing room, there was another room where there was a sink and the toilets in the corner, and then there was the bathroom. In that middle room was a little coke fire and the chimney going up through the roof, and the idea of the great Cyril Thomas, our hooker in those days, idea of a warm-up before the game was literally to open the little door on this fire and just sit there and, in general, warm his hands and get his legs warm. Then, in later years to come, Mike Nichols would warm us up in such a fashion that you thought we were going to go out and defeat the Middle East. He would have people ranting and raving around the room, banging their heads against the wall, and, in fact, Nick's warm-up was just frightening, even if you were playing for him.
One former captain, William Roy Morris, who led the side in 1946 and played his first game in 1929, says life in the dressing room is different today than when he was playing. You probably don't know who I'm talking about, but you will if I mention the nickname given to him by the King's Home supporters way back in the 30s, so-called because of the way he used to dig for the ball in the days when players could be pulled away from a maul. Digger Morris, who remembers playing under the great Fred Wadley.
None of your all the team talks then, you say, "Come on, my babbies, you know what I've got to do." And that was it. None of this jumping about and running your head against the wall and none of that lot then. And for the game, on the table, big tin of Vaseline, that was it. None of your coffee and foo-foo powder and these girls rubbing you down all that caper. Oh, yes, none of that.
No foo-foo powder. Whatever next?
Beer was 6 pence a pint. Petrol was 10 pence to take me a gallon. I used to drive my motorbike about. I used to wear plus fours on my old motorbike. Boots were about 25 bob. Piece of fish, tuppence, pair of chips. Haircut was 6 pence from Danny Borders in High Street.
It takes you back a bit, doesn't it?
Oh, Christ, yeah.
Digger's one of the very few who can remember rugby in the 20s. Although he played his first game in 1929, he only watched his first game at King's Home 5 years earlier, on November the 13th, 1924.
A team called Captain Dunn's 15, and Tommy Millington was fullback. And the winger tried to jump over Tom Millington's head and he dragged him down by his ankles. I can remember that. And I remember the All Blacks playing the county when Neepy was playing for the All Blacks. Pouring down with rain. I think the score was 6-3, if I remember rightly.
What sort of style of rugby did Gloucester play back in the 30s and early 30s?
Well, it's only natural. They played to their strength, their forwards. Dobie had some good backs, the C.C. Tanner, J.C. Brooks, McCandless, McKay. We had a very good side, but the forwards used to be there to do the job.
Did you fear anybody at King's Hall?
Nobody. Oh, that's my strong point. We never played Neath and all these small clubs then days. Only Cardiff, Newport, Netherley and Swansea, the four leading clubs. That's all we played down there in them days.
And what was your record against them?
Well, we beat Cardiff at Cardiff, Newport at Newport, Swansea at Swansea and Netherley at Netherley. And we got presented with a blazer for it.
Had that ever been done before?
No, never since.